rest of the story. Where have the hysterical teenage audiences gone? In the 60s, frantic, grimacing young girls swooned over the Beatles. In the 50s, their older sisters went wild at the sight or sound of Elvis Presley. In the 40s, it was somebody else. His name was Francis, though I don't believe anybody ever called him that. Today, we're going to call him that. What Francis did to the young women of his generation, their psyches, their souls, was positively astounding. How quickly we forget. During performances, they would leap from their seats and rush toward the stage. They threw bouquets of flowers and jewelry and sometimes articles of clothing. They wept, they screamed, they fainted. They behaved in every bizarre manner imaginable. Indeed, nobody ever before in the history of show business had held his fans under such a spell. Teenagers and older clawed and scratched and fought like roller derby Amazons over souvenirs. Anything would do as long as he had touched it. Young ladies often dashed toward him with scissors, hoping to abscond with a lock of hair. One woman actually seized the butt of a cigar that she had watched Francis smoke and then carried it in her bosom for years. Some say forever after. And there were groupies in the 40s. If we may call them that, the ones who waited for Francis at his hotel, the ones who followed him from town to town on the tour, some even disguising themselves as men so they could get closer to him. The profound devotion of his admirers made Francis perhaps the wealthiest performer of his day, and he spent money lavishly. At one time, he had no fewer than 60 expensively tailored jackets and 365 neckties, and of course, manufacturers capitalized on his celebrity, flooding their various markets for more than a decade with clothing and jewelry and even candy, merchandised under Francis's name. His egomania was staggering. He was a superstar, and he never let anybody forget it. He thrived on adulation. He couldn't bear to lose the spotlight on or off stage. In fact, a great conflict existed between his innate love of solitude and his need for a fawning entourage. Bad press, and there was much of that, often drove him into a profane fist-shaking frenzy. And yet it should be noted that Francis vigorously encouraged the gossip regarding his sporadic misbehavior, his sometimes impertinence in the presence of VIPs. And also there were fine qualities, kindness and generosity, which offset his consummate pride and occasional irascibility. Music aside, however, the world of entertainment will longest remember Francis's sex appeal. Even as a much older man, he never failed to attract women. So perhaps it was envy, in part, that inspired so many of his colleagues to minimize his accomplishments of the dazzling performer with the shoulder-length hair and the outrageous tight-fitting costumes. The first one-man show in the history of the concert stage. The mesmerizing pianist-composer of the 1840s who turned a generation upside down. Francis, in Hungarian, Ferenc, who called himself Franz Liszt. And now you know the rest of the story.